Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Well, welcome to New Life Live. This is Mark Cameron. I'm sitting in the host chair today, and I'm joined by two of my favorite doctors, Dr. Jim Burns and Dr. Alice Benton. And of course, we've been on the show together before, but never as a trio. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see how this works out for us. And if you want to be on the show with our trio, we are taking calls for the next hour live, 1-800-229-3000. Feel free to reach out to us, and we will give you our best wisdom that we have. And speaking of wisdom, Alice, I know you have something to share with us.
Well, I usually look at research having to do with screens and children, but this time I focused in on moms. I was looking at a survey that was done with some 2,000 moms. How does it affect moms who scroll frequently on social media and who follow momfluencers who post mainly about motherhood? Well, it turns out moms who scroll frequently are about 4 times more likely to feel inadequate and bad as moms. And a couple particular areas come to the surface. We feel like we're not cooking enough, especially organic foods. We're not waking up early enough. We're not exercising enough. And most moms, about 1 in 7, will say, I know what's posted on social media is not realistic, and yet I still feel like I have to strive for it. It's good for us to be inspired. It's good for us to have role models so that we do strive to improve. But if it's not grounded in reality, and if we're not with a community of other messy moms who share their stories and give us grace for also being messy, we can be off the charts in insecurity with unrealistic standards. It's a setup if we're not careful.
Yeah, it's totally a setup. I was just with my wife last night watching through, you know, organic eating, and it seems great, right? But how realistic is that to do in our busy world, in our busy schedules? And you know, I just realized, I said to my wife this morning, you know, I'm addicted to my phone because I pick up my phone when I don't have anything to do, and I search trying to look at my phone when I don't even know what I'm wanting to look at. And so I just need to put that down.
Yeah. I think we have to play – we have to quit playing the comparison game.
Yeah.
We do that. And you know, I'm thinking about that. Alice, when you said that about moms, my heart broke because I have 3 daughters who are, you know, in that age bracket of young moms. And they feel pressure, the pressure that they feel. And I think the next generation is going to have it, the kids too. I mean, you've written a book on that about kids and screens. And that – we have to be careful. We have to start asking the question, is technology bringing us – health, or is it bringing and happiness, or is it bringing us down? And I think too often it does that. Or even the next question is technology bringing our families together or pulling them apart? And we do that. Mark, we all do this. You know, if there's nothing to do, oh, pick up my phone, see what's going on. I watch reels, comedy reels. I don't know what that is. Maybe I need to come into one of your offices and get some help. but I'll do that if I'm bored. I go, I used to do something more appropriate, like probably read a book or sit down and have a conversation. We have to be careful.
And it helps to be aware of how do I feel before I go on screen and when I come off, and then how often am I going on? And we can check our phones up to 400 times a day. Right. So I've set a goal for myself. Right now I'm trying to stay under 25. I'm trying to unlock my screen only 25 times a day, because that's about how many times I'll check social media.
That is insane, 400. I haven't done the math, but I would guess that's probably something like, you know, once every 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Checking our phones. And that's what I love about your book, Alice, is it's all about modeling. It's all about the parent showing the child how to manage social media, creating these really intentional discussions where, you know, the phone is down, the media is down, and you're doing that face-to-face time with the kids. And so if you want to know more about this, Dr. Alice Benton's book, Understanding and Loving Your Child in a Screen-Saturated World, co-authored with Stephen Artimer. And if you want to join us again today, 1-800-229-3000. We're taking your calls live for the next hour.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment. The Bible has much to say about forgiveness. Its central theme is God seeking and saving those in dire need of forgiveness. Jesus willingly died on the cross for you and me, even though we often don't feel a need to be forgiven. Even though you and I all too often continue to exhibit our rebellious nature. Through faith in Jesus, God forgives us in spite of ourselves. But there's more. God's forgiveness is a creative force. It spills out to you when you receive it and affects every one of your human relationships. This being the case, forgiveness is both a gift and a command of God. This is where things get sticky. Not only can forgiveness be difficult, but we have a way of making the whys, whens, and hows of forgiveness quite confusing. For some practical help, visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com, and thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
Well, I love hearing from Steve. Steve, of course, is on sabbatical, but we still get to hear his wisdom through these New Life Moments. Here again, this is Mark Cameron. I'm here with Dr. Alice Benton and Dr. Jim Burns. If you want to join us live, 1-800-229-3000. But Steve brings up this great point here about forgiveness, and he uses this word sticky. It is very sticky. So what would you guys say? I mean, how do we forgive when we don't even feel like it?
I think it's important to be honest when we can't forgive yet. There's a setup that we're supposed to forgive, and so we can do it prematurely when my heart's really not ready, but I think it's the right thing. So I'm just going to act like I'm forgiving, or I'm going to say it, but I don't really mean it yet.
Right.
But I think God prefers us to admit, I know I should, and I can't yet. God, help me, friends, help me get to the place of forgiveness, but I'm still too angry. I'm still too hurt, and my perpetrator is not remorseful at all, so I'm not ready yet to forgive. It's okay to not be ready as long as we're willing to talk about it and invite God in to prepare our hearts to move us towards forgiveness.
You know, I love what you said, because we don't have to immediately forgive. I mean, sometimes we just have to take a pause. One of the things that's helped me over the years is get in touch with the forgiveness that God has given to me. Because if I need to offer forgiveness, sometimes I'll be arrogant, even in my relationship with my wife, Kathy, and I'll say every morning, you know, I confess my sins, forgive me of my sins, and then I'm not going to forgive Kathy for some little simple thing, and mine's worse than that, but God has done it. When I'm aware of God's unconditional love, when I'm aware of His forgiveness to me, which is so broad and beautiful and powerful, it helps me at least take another step sometimes. But I think you're right. I don't think we should fake it. You know, my little 8-year-old grandson kind of goes, I'm sorry. You know, and his way of saying it, he's just like, okay, don't put me on a timeout, to his mom and dad, because I said I'm sorry. You know, well, you know, there's a process there. And I appreciate you bringing that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the biggest challenge that's challenged me to forgive is knowing that I'm never going to have to forgive somebody more than the Lord has forgiven
like
me.
Yeah.
And it is hard, right? It's hard when the other person isn't repentant, and it's hard when we feel that resentment. And I heard this research not too long ago. I've shared this before on air, that there's actually a difference between decisional forgiveness and emotional forgiveness. And in fact, it takes on average 18 times of decisional forgiveness before emotional forgiveness follows. And so you don't actually have to feel like forgiving somebody in order to forgive them in your heart and in your head, and then eventually as you do that, the feeling will follow.
Yeah.
I've never heard that number. 18 times to make the decision.
I wrote down decisional and emotional. I never really heard it that way, and I think it's a really good thing for all of us to know, learn, practice. It's so key.
One other biblical example that can get us there is to pray for our enemies first if we're not yet ready to forgive them, and that softens our heart to the process.
No, that's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what Jesus taught us to do, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, again, that's so hard, right, to pray for somebody who has hurt you here. Well, great topic, great discussion. We're going to go to Maddox, who's calling from Dallas, Texas. Listen to us on Sirius XM. Maddox, you're live, New Life Live. How can we help you today?
Hey, guys. I love the discussion. I think it's very relevant and applies directly to my life. I'm a 39-year-old. Dad of two. I got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old at home. And I have had an iPhone or smartphone since 2008, I believe, when it came out. And just the topic of checking it 400 times a day is kind of scary. But I hear about this come up in discussions or at church or in small groups of people and parents who are just worried about doing the right thing for their kids. And I've read all the data about, in this technology-driven centric world, like these phones are getting and tablets are getting introduced to children at such an early age. And so my question is there any case studies or like recent data that's come out about the long-term like effects of being exposed to these devices for such a long period of time in the blue light 400 times a day, so on and so forth?
Well, Alice, you have done a lot of research for your book, so I'm going to let you answer this one here.
Brace yourself, Maddox, that there is quite a bit of information available, and some of it's scary, because we know that when children are spending a significant amount of time on screen, and really over 2 hours starts to become significant, there seems to be a tipping point at about the 1 hour mark where children actually experience happiness up to the 1 hour mark of being on screen. And if we don't let our kids on screen at all, we're seeing resentment, we're seeing frustration towards parents, not always a bad thing, but about an hour of screen time is looking like that's a helpful thing for us to allow children, depending on the content, of course. But once it creeps up past an hour, 2 hours, and the average child is spending 8 hours a day on screen, then we see higher levels of anxiety, depression, low self-esteem. Stress hormones like cortisol stay in the body system longer. They're not digested or metabolized as quickly as they are if we get our kids off screen. And we're seeing a correlation. It's not direct causation, but a correlation between more time on screen and thoughts of suicidality. So serious consequences of our children being unsupervised, unmonitored on screen, and again, particularly the content. If they're allowed to access whatever they want without parents monitoring that, we're seeing our children get into pornography and really graphic pornography much, much earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's scary.
Great, great research here, Alice. What about you, Jim?
Well, I absolutely say amen. Exactly where I was going to go in terms of depression, anxiety. I mean, we see that with kids today. You know, there are more kids who are playing that comparison game. One of the things I would say to parents, Maddox, and I think you're the kind of dad that you're asking the right questions, but I think we give our kids access to cell phones too early. And a woman said, well, what's the age? I don't know that there's a magic age, but I wouldn't give them a cell phone. That's giving them access to a computer that has access to the world and the pornography and anything else. So what I would do is I would have when they're younger, if you're doing it only for protection, I would give them the family phone, see how they do with it, and create a phone, even if it's an extra phone. But this isn't your phone. This is our family phone. And I would give them an opportunity to maybe text you, but maybe it might not have online capability yet. They don't need that when they're super young. Because, again, I think they're not able to handle the incredible, powerful device that you said you got in 2008. That's an incredible, powerful device that's connected to the world. And it they can't handle it. We do that partly because of peer pressure. Other parents gave it to them or their kids early, and we don't want our kids to be the only ones. But it's not healthy. So again, if you're going to put a phone in front of them, it's not their phone yet. It's the family phone. And then as they become more responsible, you see them acting responsible, that's when you then, you know, maybe move it over. And even then, I think it's important to really monitor, you know, for a lot. I think you get this, Maddox, but I think a lot of our listeners sometimes just have to remember we can have access to history on where they've been and what they've been doing, no matter what the age. Please don't miss also what Alice said. You know, pretty much all authorities are now saying for kids under 13 to have 1 hour of screen time. And I know that goes against what our kids are experiencing, and COVID killed it because everybody was on their phone for longer. But 1 hour. And then after that, even up until they're 18, just the 2 hour. I mean, for all of us, why do we need to be on it so much? I realize they're on it more because they're on it because they're at school and school now. I mean, little kids have access to tablets. So they're already spending time on that. And part of that time, even at school, is playing games, things like that. So I think we have to be really careful. This is something that, you know, my parents didn't worry about because we didn't have cell phones in those days. But today, every parent has to become kind of an expert on it. Get the resources. Alice's book is a good resource for that.
Mm-hmm. Maddox, how does our answer affect you? What are you feeling hearing all this?
I think it's great. I think it would be even better if schools were to set those regulations so there was no peer pressure that was mandating or pushing that narrative for kids, like they felt forced to get a phone.
Maddox, my son told me, he said, I'm the only one in my class who doesn't have my own phone, and he is only 11 years old. And he tends towards exaggeration, as many of my family members and I do. So I'm like, come on, you're the only one. And he said, well, maybe one of my friends doesn't have it either. But then when I looked at the research, Maddox, he was not lying.
Yeah.
The majority of our elementary age children actually do have their own phone, and eight is an average age of getting their own. They think they're the owner of it, and their parents allow them to think they're the owner of it. So that's the norm. So folks listening, if that's where you are, I want you to know you're in the normal range, but there's always time to wean our kids back off that. And it's okay to say, gosh, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I let you have ownership too soon. I didn't know it wasn't good for you. Right. It's my fault I did that. And now I need to change that to protect you.
Right.
And we can ask our kids, how does it affect you that now I'm limiting it? Because it's kind of an unfair setup that we parents allowed so much. We didn't know it was this powerful.
No, but sometimes when our kids say, well, that's not fair, we say, well, you know what? Life's not fair, and I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And if I was your age, I might feel the same way. But as a parent, we say, nevertheless, and what that says is, I'm in charge, right? Our kids, some of those kids have phones you're talking about, Alice, at this age, and same with Maddox's world. we're trying to be their best friend. So, yeah, we'll give you a phone because we want you to like us. And at the same time, we're giving them, like I said, access to the world. I mean, this. I was talking to a dad whose son was 9 and already involved in pornography. And I said, well, does he have a cell phone? Well, yeah, he has a cell phone. Do you have it filtered? Do you have a filter on that cell phone? Well, no. So I said, so you would never allow pornography to come into the room. You'd never allow a bunch of strippers or people to come into the bedroom. I mean, it was graphic. And he was like, well, of course not. And I said, well, that's what you're doing when you're giving unmonitored phone use to that boy. And I'm not – I honestly think the dad had to come back and say, we're going to do some filters. To say exactly what you said. Hey, I'm sorry. I made a mistake, and we're going to change this up a little bit. The kid is not going to go, oh, well, that's a great idea, Dad. They're not going to do that. They're going to say, what are you doing? Of course that's not fair. And we say, nevertheless, here's how it's going to be.
And I call that parental prerogative. You have your right as a parent to change your mind, especially if you realize what you're doing for your child is not appropriate or dangerous or not beneficial. And, you know, I love that metaphor of you wouldn't allow strippers to come into the room. Yeah. You know, Alice, I was on the show with you a couple of months back, and you used the metaphor of would you put a vending machine in your kid's bedroom? And we wouldn't do that because when we give them a phone, they literally have access to almost everything in the entire world. My kids, they're going to be 19 this year, but they just got cell phones a little bit more than a year ago when they were 17. Mm-hmm. And so I heard it probably from about age 10 or 11 onwards, like, I'm the only one who doesn't have a cell phone. But we managed it, and it worked out. And even then, when they did get a cell phone, it was a flip phone that they had. Mm-hmm. And again, you've got to show that you can use it appropriately before you get the freedom here.
I take a lot of hope, Maddox. I've gotten to talk to teenagers who are struggling with screen addiction, depression, anxiety, all that I was describing. And they have privately told me, I need my parents to take over because I can't choose what I know would be better for me. Don't tell them that. I don't really want them to know because I want it and I don't want it. I want their structure and I don't want it. But teenagers will admit, I need my parent to step in. And in fact, they do want their parent to step in if they can be honest about it. And I've heard that multiple times.
And even when they're not teens, I would say this to my wife. We're not parenting them for their 16-year-old selves. We're parenting them for what their 26-year-old selves would say to them. And I had a 26-year-old in therapy about a year ago, and he had a strong porn addiction. He said the worst thing a parent can do is to give a kid an iPod or an iPhone. And that's him as a 26-year-old self. But of course, his younger self is going to want all of those freedoms. So thanks for calling in, Maddox. We are going to send you a copy of Alice and Steve's book, Understanding and Loving Your Child in the Screen-Saturated World. And again, anybody else listening want to join us? 1-800-229-3000.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. This is Mark Cameron. I'm on today with Dr. Alice Benton and Dr. Jim Burns here. And if you don't know, we have a new episode of Every Man's Battle podcast that just dropped today. Special guest Laura Manglian McDonald is on. Laura does our Restore conferences for women who have been wounded by sexual betrayal, and she also works with JJ, and they both do the Intimacy and Marriage Conference too. So that will be a great podcast to listen to here. We are talking here. We're going to go to Beth here from Midland, Virginia, who listens on WAVA. Beth, I think you have a comment for us. What's on your mind today?
Yes, I work with the youth group at our church, and we have winter retreats, and then we also take the kids for the summer to a week-long camp. And one of the rules is they're not allowed to take their cell phones. And it was a battle at first, but like just this last summer at camp, the kids were like, I do not miss my phone, and it is so freeing to be able to sit and talk and make friends, because if they had their phones, they'd be on their phones and wouldn't be making friends.
That's a good, strong, probably difficult rule you have. I wouldn't be surprised if you get parental pushback about children's not having their phones with them. Have you experienced that?
At the beginning we did, because they were saying, like, my son needs his phone to sleep at night. He listens to, the sound machine on his phone, so it was a battle at first, but now they know, no phones.
It's such an important part of building independence to not have your parents be easily accessible to you. The anxiety and the tension of that is good and necessary for growth. Bravo that you have the courage to hold to that rule.
Yeah, and I encourage all our youth groups. And, even at our youth group meetings, we encourage the kids, put your phones away. It's not mandatory, but you just see the kids that can do it can engage and make friends, whereas others just sit on their phones and they do not make friends.
Well, kids will admit that if they spend that many hours, the 8 or so hours on their phone per day, they become anxious about interacting face-to-face in person. It's as if the skills to do so kind of atrophy. And we become nervous about it. I don't know if I know how to talk to a person face-to-face, but I'm okay texting them. And so we need to require it of our children to help them through the tension and discomfort of it, because they've got to grow past that.
You know what? I think, Beth, what you're doing at your youth group is perfect. And I'm actually seeing hundreds and hundreds of youth ministries do that now at retreats and camps. There are camps now that, there's little places where they can put their phone. And if there was some kind of an emergency, they have to ask permission. They can get to their phone. They can make the call. I mean, that I understand that for parents will want that. But again, what I hear exactly what you said, and my background is youth ministry. So what I heard you say is kids will say, wow, this was actually a lot better than I thought. I enjoyed not being as connected to my phone. Now, again, there's some kids who they're not happy about it, of course. But I think you're doing the right thing. And I think youth groups all over America have to continue to do that. It's interesting. You said you're from Midland, Virginia. I was speaking a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic. So that is more than a couple of years ago. I was speaking in Midland at a parents event, but they asked me, my background is speaking to kids. And so it was a Friday night, 800 kids in Midland. And I opened by saying, how many of you believe it's possible to be addicted to? And I pulled out my phone. And there were 800 kids, and there were 1,600 hands that went up, because they were always going, yeah, we believe it. I go, hey, well, how many of you are addicted? And you know what, Beth? Two kids put their hands down, and all the rest put their hands up. They knew that they even knew they were addicted. So one of the things you're doing by having them when they go to events like retreats and things like that, even when they go into the youth group meeting, and there's churches that have a barrel and they put you can put it in the barrel, or you can put it, more like cubby holes type thing. By doing that, you're saying, we got something here more important than that phone. We're going to talk about the risen Christ. And to do that, we need your full attention. And Kids will appreciate it as you do it, but don't expect everybody to appreciate it.
Yeah, and I love what you guys are saying here, because really it's the parents' responsibility. If we know that our kids are addicted, it's our responsibility to help them out of that addiction. And I think oftentimes, because you mentioned it here, Alice, is that's a common objection that I hear when I'm speaking with parents about this issue is, well, what if I need to get hold of my child? What if they need to get hold of me? What if it's an emergency? Yeah. And when we spin that narrative, we're actually pushing anxiety into them by doing that by making them feel like they can't be without this phone. They need to have this phone at all times here.
And you give them a number. You give them an emergency number that somebody has access to. So it's one of the leaders or something. Right. So on these kind of things, they can be reached. So you say to parents, oh, we understand how important that is. Here's the number. Just call and we can get right to your son or daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been figured out for decades here before we had phones, and we'll continue to be able to figure it out now. I would say to my kids, well, if you need to get hold of me, everybody else has a phone. So you've memorized my number. So you'll be able to get a hold of me.
So good.
And sure enough, they did. Hey, thanks, Beth, for calling in. That's such a great comment, and so glad to hear that your church is doing that and that other churches and youth groups are doing that too in our area. Well, when we come back, we are going to go to another call here, but still going to be on the air for another 30 minutes. If you want to join us live, 1-800-229-3000. We also have Intimacy in Marriage coming up in July 26th. That's our workshop for marriages. It's going to be in Washington, D.C. We're going to be talking about attachment styles and how that impacts the conflict pattern in your marriage. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. This is Mark Cameron on with Dr. Jim Burns and Dr. Alice Benton. And we have a few other intensives coming up. We've got our Emotional Freedom. That's online June 1st. We've got Restore. That is July 12th to the 14th in Washington, D.C. And then, as I mentioned, Intimacy in Marriage, July 26th in Washington, D.C. We're going to go to Dawn here, who's calling us from Williamport, Maryland, and she listens on Sirius XM. Hi, Dawn. What's on your mind today?
Hello. Hi, yes. I was just hearing you speak about children screening forgiveness, the topic of forgiveness. And what I'd love to know, take a pause, that right away it's hard to sometimes forgive, that it's okay to take a pause. Can you tell me where that is biblically? Because sometimes I think we have too much of a tendency in this culture to put it off and just ignore people, not work through conflict because we feel like we're not emotionally ready. But I believe that forgiveness is something that God enables us to do supernaturally. Can you help me with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right here. I think there's definitely a difference between pausing to collect your thoughts and gather yourself, compose yourself emotionally, and then avoidance, putting something off and not coming back to it. And I think oftentimes, just with many things, not just with forgiveness, we need to learn to pause, calm ourselves down, take a break before we go and think about how do I have a well-done, intentional conversation with someone. But what might you say here, Jim?
You know, I agree with you, and I also agree with the fact that sometimes we need to pause. If we're being healthy with our own lives, Don, I think there's just times when we need to take a little break as Mark was saying, and kind of reflect, get ourselves together, and then offer the forgiveness. If we don't do that, then I don't know that sometimes our forgiveness is as real. If I jump it at too quickly at forgiving someone and I don't deal with it in my own heart, then what I find sometimes is that my forgiveness is kind of fake, or I'm not really forgiving, and then I begin to resent and have some bitterness. So I don't think that the Bible says forgive, period. And I don't think it sets a time period, but it does say for us to forgive. But if somebody had major betrayal in their life, then they might have to work through that before they can offer that forgiveness. So, you know, oftentimes before freedom comes some the pain. Sometimes we have to go through some of the pain of that so that we can then offer a true forgiveness. That's my thought on it. So again, I at the break you were on. I think somebody said they were on Sirius or not Sirius, but on YouTube they could have seen it. I was on my phone looking at every scripture on forgiveness, and it doesn't say it just says forgive. It doesn't say when or how as much.
So I would, Don, I would combine it with the Bible telling us to speak the truth. And we can find that all over the place, but two places are in Ephesians 4 and Leviticus 19. So if I'm to speak the truth, and the internal truth is that I can't forgive yet. I know I should. I want to. Or maybe I want to, but I really don't want to today because I'm still too hurt and too angry. Then speaking the truth about where my heart and mind really are at this point bring some freedom and some grace in to then move into the eventually being able to forgive. So I combine the two. We've got to forgive, but we've got to speak the truth about where we are in the process of forgiveness.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's real good.
And I would add further to that I think it's important for us to be able to feel and experience our hurt, because I think what I'm hearing you say here too, Dawn, is, and I see people who get caught up in this, that they can fall into this deep guilt because they've been hurt and wounded so badly that they feel like I need to forgive. And then in forgiveness, that means I have to just completely let go of my hurt. And that's hard to do, right? It's okay for us to forgive and still experience our hurt. And sometimes we do need to have that reflection time upon our hurt so that, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, that when we have that intentional conversation, we can express to the other person how we've been wounded. And that's part of their reconciliation process too, I think, with us and with the Lord, is to be able to see how we've been hurt. And that's how you end up building empathy here.
Yeah. Don, what do you think of our answer?
Well, I in some ways disagree, because I think part of the reconciliation, yes, is to deal with those emotions. But I think the choice to forgive need not be dependent on my ability for my emotions mm-hmm. to cope with it. Mm-hmm. That God will take care of my emotions after I've just, surrendered to his process, and I've chosen to forgive even in the worst of circumstances, that if we give people time until their emotions can work it out to be authentic, I think the emotions follow so much of what we choose, and that's a slippery slope, because we have a culture of people just in their woundedness feeling justified because they can't handle it and they've been hurt and they don't want to forgive, so it's okay because that's too hard on them, and they become the victim of not only the offense but the hurt, and they, you know, it turns to bitterness after a while. And you know, who are we to say how long it needs to take? I think God in his love has made it that it's possible supernaturally for us to forgive, even though reconciliation may take longer and that authenticness, but I think it's a choice.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying really follows with cognitive behavioral therapy, that sometimes we can act our way into a feeling. Our feelings can follow our action. So if we just wait to do the right thing until we feel like it, there's going to be a lot of good things we never do. But I agree with you, Dawn, that if we act, our feelings will often come into alignment with our actions. I don't feel like working. I don't feel like going to school. I don't feel like doing this assignment. But if I choose to do it anyhow, motivation and my heart can align with my action. You're right. Action helps feelings move along.
Yeah. Thanks for your comment here, Dawn. You know, I don't think we're in conflict with what you're saying. And it goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show, the difference between decisional forgiveness and emotional forgiveness. And yeah, what you're saying here, Dawn, is working that decisional forgiveness to get to the emotional forgiveness. But also what you were saying here, Jim, was allowing yourself to be able to take a pause, reflect upon how you've been hurt, and to be able to feel and experience
your
emotions.
Right, and I think we need to be – I think the Holy Spirit works in our lives in different ways. Sometimes it is absolutely make a decision right now. I think there's other times where I was with a young woman who was 15. I was with her youth worker who was another woman, and she had been sexually abused by her stepfather, and the stepfather was in prison. The stepfather was going to come out, and the mother wanted him to come back into the home. And she said, my mom is begging me to forgive him, but I don't know what to do. She needed some work, you know, and I wasn't going to put her down and say, oh, you need to forgive him right now.
Right.
So I hear what Dawn is saying, and I think she's mainly right in terms of the decision. But for that young 15-year-old, she wasn't ready to do that. And I think that would have been potentially an unsafe situation for her to bring that stepfather back in, who kind of wasn't even totally repentant on it yet. And also to speed up the process just by saying, well, I forgive you, I don't think she would have really meant it. Could have done some damage. That's my thought.
Yeah.
So I'm still kind of worrying about it here. I think the Holy Spirit might have worked in one person's life one way, another person's life another way in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great discussion. Okay, we're going to go back to the calls here. We're going to talk to Christy, who's calling us from Raleigh, North Carolina, listens on Sirius XM. Christy, you're live on New Life Live. How can we help you?
Hey, I was calling to see if you guys could give me some advice and thoughts on what to do when you have been the parent that's allowed too much freedom with the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Not really intentionally, but just it's kind of happened, you know, with life and family, you know, a large family with several kids, and the middle schooler in particular, he's 14, and I can see he's struggling with some anxiety, some depression, kind of getting withdrawn a little bit to some things, and I know that sometimes that can happen in that age group. We're really open and talking with him about his feelings, and he's just kind of getting at that point where he's not, he will talk to us, but, you know, he's changing. He puberty is really, one day he was a little boy, and then all of a sudden he's a different kid the next day. And I didn't have that so much with my older child. They're two totally different personalities. With this one, he uses that phone as a crutch, and I think it does give him some safety feelings. I worry that if I take that away, so strict or you know, a hard stop, that I'm going to make his anxiety and depression worse. Mm-hmm. And it's like I know I need to back off, but I'm afraid to. And he's not a kid that responds well to hard discipline as much as he does to kind of talking things through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's kind of at a loss.
Yeah, this
you know, worry, and I know fear is not from God, and I have to trust that God will provide, you know, and that Satan provides fear.
And
I've got to remind myself of that.
We have strategies we can offer you.
We'll be right back on the other side of this break.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. This is Mark Cameron on with Dr. Alice Benton and Dr. Jim Burns here. We're talking with Christy, and Christy had a concern about her 14-year-old son. He's a middle schooler. She's already given him a phone, and she sees that he has anxiety and depression, and her concern is, well, if I take that phone away from him, won't that may spiral him back into further anxiety and depression. Alice, what would you say to that?
Christy, I want you to take a deep breath and accept the reassurance that there's not one right way to go about this. So some families do just a cutoff detox. That's it. We're done with that phone usage. But that doesn't work for all families. It wouldn't work for mine either, Christy. My husband and I have very different views about screen time. My husband is lax about it, relaxed. He sees the good in it easily. I'm fearful. I see the negative in it. And so we've balanced each other out by finding that middle road. I wouldn't have even had TVs in my house if I hadn't been married to my husband. So I'm that far to one extreme. But I would wreck my marriage if I went that far, if I tried to push that. So this is my recommendation to you. I want you to have a family discussion and prep this with your husband beforehand. It's so good to start with an apology and humility that we've allowed too much, and we want to figure out how to do this differently, because we need to protect your heart, and we want to protect you from anxiety. And then lay out a couple of options with your son and allow him to give an opinion of what he thinks would work for him. A couple of options are screen use in the common area only. No screens in the bedroom after night. You'll lose access if you do something untrustworthy or if we see that your anxiety is getting too high. And let's look at weaning the time down. So let's pick an amount of time that seems doable for now. We're going to ratchet it back down to 3 hours a day instead of 5 hours a day. And then in a month, we're going to come back down from that to 2 hours a day. But we'll take family opinions. You can influence us, but you're not going to dictate what the parents decide. And from that family discussion, take one step at a time. Make it doable for you and your husband.
Great advice. Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that?
I just want to bring Alice to every conference I speak at on this stuff. I would only simply add there are times when you can do this easy, and you guys do the same thing. You dock the phone in the kitchen, and you don't have your phones at night. It's amazing you don't have to use them as alarm clocks. There's actually $10 alarm clocks. So the phone's not in the room. That helps. Then at every meal, we dock our phone. But you dock your phone, too. Your husband docks his phone. Everybody docks their phone. So, and then in the morning, there's no screen time. You can take a quick look, and then there's no screen time until you go to school, whatever. And then during school, maybe there's some monitoring during that. So there are ways for you to naturally do this, but you take the same hit on some of those, especially, you know, meal time, bedtime, you know, things like that. And that might be a good start, but I think she's right. I think the way your son is, I probably wouldn't just say, okay, no phone. I would simply begin that process and start with an apology. That's a good form of discipline, actually. People don't think of it that way.
I love the advice you guys are giving here. So many people are benefiting from it. Christy, mm-hmm. we're going to send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids. That's going to walk you through how to have one of these intentional conversations with your son to be able to also emotionally support him as you share your message here too. But thanks so much for calling. Really, really appreciate it. We're going to go to one more call here on the show. We're going to go to Rod. Rod's actually calling from Alberta, Canada, across the border here. He listens on Sirius XM. Rod, we've got about 5 minutes here. How can we help you today?
Well, I'll be quick. How you doing, eh? Well, I got an issue. I'm the youngest of three boys. My mom loved me with a huge heart of gold, and I'm a selfish individual. I have problems in my life. When things go wrong, I feel like I'm getting attacked or something, I always have to defend myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a believer in Jesus, I think, you know, I was just kind of moved to call you guys to ask, how do I die of self? What are some practical steps? What do I do?
Rod, we so appreciate your question. Oh, the humility you have to ask this. Tell us just briefly, what kind of structured help have you already received?
None.
Okay.
No help.
And so, Rod, getting into recovery work, where you start to work through things like acknowledging that you can't change yourself, you invite God in and you invite other people in to do for you what you can't do on your own. And recovery takes you into a fearless moral inventory where you bring to light shortcomings like you're doing here, and you go in depth about how your shortcomings have affected people around you. Recovery takes you through an amends process. So you start to get really honest about the kind of person you've been and how it's affected others. And you can do this. It works really well in groups, and we've got New Life Recovery groups, or we can get you connected to a coach or to a counselor who can walk you through the steps of recovery.
Great advice here, Alice. Jim, what would you add?
Well, you know what, Rod? I love your heart, by the way. It's just awesome. I'm trying to identify with you as a Canadian there. One of the things I want to suggest you do is read the Gospels only through these eyes this time. Read the Gospels you know, the call to Christ is the call to serve. And I find that when you bathe yourself in the Word of God and you watch how Jesus served, that you'll want that, and that'll help you. It's crazy because it's kind of the opposite of what some people would say, but just by reading that and immersing yourself in the idea that the call to Christ is the call to serve, he talks so much about servanthood and also about dying to yourself, you know? Yeah, I mean, there's a load of scriptures. Immerse yourself in those things. That doesn't mean that it's going to take away everything. It just means that by bathing yourself in that, you're going to want to follow him the more you do it. And, you know, I'm going to suggest that you spend, you know, 10, 15 minutes a day reading through the Gospels. You can do it in 90 days if you do it in 15 minutes a day. You can read through the Gospel in 90 days. Do that and then repeat it. and watch your life change by saying that's, you know, watching Jesus wash the disciples' feet in John 13. And when he washed the disciples' feet, you know, at the end, you know, he said, you know, follow my example. So those kinds of things I think can be motivated for us youngest kids who sometimes think, I'm the youngest in my family, who sometimes think we have it all together.
Rod, I'm amazed at your self-awareness and having that amount of self-awareness and humility just kind of really is a fantastic foundation to be able to go into therapy with, because you're aware of what's happening and you admit it here too. What's your response to some of what we've said here?
Oh, hey, you know, it's enlightening. It really is. It's moving in my heart because I'm desperate. I need help, and you know what? I take your guys' words for wisdom here. I really do. I appreciate all that you said. If you guys can hook me up with some group or people that can help me, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, we absolutely are going to do that. Stay on the phone here. We're going to see if we can hook you up with a New Life counselor or a New Life recovery group here. We're also going to send you a copy of Take Your Life Back by Steve Otterburn.
And Rod, when you've got desperation and awareness, all you need to combine it with is structure, a path, a proven path, and we've got those, and then people who are for you and will guide you and hold your hand through it. And that is a winning combination to see change in character very quickly.
Thanks so much for calling, Rod. We really appreciate you. We appreciate all of our callers who have called in today. Not just our callers, but we also appreciate our supporters. If you don't know, we have something called Club New Life. And if you can regularly commit to giving to us, we have all kinds of benefits for Club New Life. We will send you some resources upon joining. We also have a video library by our fantastic co-hosts on all kinds of different topics that you can have access to on demand. You get
live meetings with Steve and Becky.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, periodically. We do not one-on-one, but group live meetings, right? You get discounts to the workshops, and you also get discounts to the books that we offer. So thank you so much for listening today. I'm going to leave us with Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And if you need some strength, give us a call here, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Thanks, Alice. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.